Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. If you were impacted by the recent floods, today we have a lot of important information for you. President Joe Biden has issued a federal disaster declaration for San Diego County, and we'll tell you how to apply for federal aid if you had flood damage on our show today. Former City Attorney Mike Aguirre and civil rights leader Shane Harris have announced a lawsuit against the City of San Diego representing flood victims. The Small Business Center is opening a local flood relief center to help small businesses and nonprofits apply for loans for uninsured flood damages, and you don't have to start paying those loans back for a year. Lemon Grove residents are speaking out with complaints about flood damage, including sinkholes that they say are caused by storm drains, but the city so far has refused to take responsibility. Consumer advocates are warning about flooded vehicles that may be on the market, so we'll tell you what to watch out for if you're shopping for a used vehicle, and what you should know if you're selling one. On our Capitol Report, the Biden administration has announced loan forgiveness for many student loans under the SAVE plan. Find out how to apply on today's show. Former President Donald Trump has been ordered to pay over $354 million after a judge found his company fraudulently inflated its real estate values to get loans, and we'll have details. Locally, Santee firefighters have launched the Protect Santee initiative to increase staffing and build a new fire station since the city is failing to meet federal minimum standards for fire response times. La Mesa is seeking artists to create new murals at its Walkway of Stars, honoring volunteers. District Attorney Summer Steffen has won a national award from the U.S. Department of Justice. From California News Service, we'll have a report on a Housing for All bill introduced into Congress. Plus, hear about a new task force on artificial intelligence that includes two congressional members from San Diego, Sarah Jacobs and Daryl Issa. A new dog park has opened in Allied Gardens where you can take your furry friends off-leash. A retail theft hearing seeks solutions to smash-and-grab robberies in California. Then, on Destination East County, hear about some fun and festive events coming up across our inland region in late February and early March. And finally, on 2024 Talks from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headline stories, including the arrest of an FBI informant for lying about bribery allegations against Joe Biden and his son Hunter, growing calls for a ceasefire in Gaza, and an Alabama court's ruling that embryos are people, and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. President Joe Biden has declared a major disaster in California, making federal funding available to help those who suffered flood damages from January 21st through January 23rd here in San Diego County. Residents and business owners who sustained losses can begin applying for assistance immediately at disasterassistance.gov or by calling 800-621-FEMA, that's 800-621-3362, or by using the FEMA app. The storm displaced over 1,200 residents in San Diego County, bringing the fourth heaviest rainfall since 1850, according to the National Weather Service. Residents in some southeast San Diego communities, as well as Spring Valley, La Mesa, and other areas, had several feet of water inside their homes as creeks and storm drains overflowed. The president has ordered federal assistance to supplement state, tribal, and local recovery efforts from the severe storm. Assistance can include grants for temporary housing and home repairs, as well as low-cost loans to cover uninsured property losses and other programs to help individuals and business owners recover from the effects of the disaster. Federal funding is also available on a cost-sharing basis for hazard mitigation measures statewide. The federal disaster declaration comes 3 weeks after it was requested by both Governor Gavin Newsom and San Diego Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs. Additional designations may be made at a later date if requested by the state and warranted by the results of further damage assessments from later storms. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Former City Attorney Mike Aguirre and civil rights leader Shane Harris with the People's Association of Justice Advocates held a press conference last week to announce a lawsuit against the City of San Diego on behalf of homeowners who suffered damages from the January 22nd flooding. Harris cited a 2018 audit of the city's stormwater system, as well as an unsuccessful 2022 effort to pass a ballot measure to fund infrastructure as evidence that city officials knew of flood risks from its storm drains, but failed to resolve them. The report specifically mentioned Choyas Creek issues that caused flooding across southeastern San Diego. Harris says this was an act of man, not an act of God. He adds that the city could have prevented January's flood damages had it prioritized needed upgrades after the audit more than 4 years earlier. Over 1,000 residents in southeast San Diego have been displaced and hundreds of homes damaged or destroyed, according to Harris. Aguirre and his law partner, Mia Severson, have been documenting residents' damages and are helping them file claims with the city, which does not comment on pending litigation. Aguirre says his legal team has found examples over the last 20 years where the city has been advised that their funding is inadequate to address infrastructure problems. In addition to damages, the lawsuit will seek an injunction against the city to force it to establish a storm water utility and make creation of a new storm water system a priority. The city has announced plans to put a storm water system funding initiative on the ballot. At the press conference, Harris also announced a drive to collect restaurant gift cards, blankets, shoes, and socks for flood survivors. For more information, you can visit pajmovement.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, your network for social justice, this is John Tidwell.
Water-damaged vehicles may be flooding the market after the severe January storms. Flooded vehicles are apt to have permanent damage to electrical systems, including airbags, putting lives at risk. But some water damage can take months or even years to appear, resulting in system failures and costly repairs. Now, most insurers will declare a flooded vehicle a total loss, which means it should be issued a salvage or flood title. It's then sent to auction, where it may be stripped and sold for parts. But some are sold to unscrupulous buyers who may try to resell them. So how can you protect yourself from buying a flood-damaged vehicle? First, it's important to check the Carfax free flood damage report. Last year, Carfax estimated there were 15,000 to 20,000 flooded cars in California alone. The Carfax tool allows you to enter the vehicle identification number, or VIN number, to learn if a car you're considering buying has been listed as flood damaged with the Department of Motor Vehicles, which is required by law in California. You can check the National Insurance Crime Bureau also. It offers VINCheck. This is another free service to search for evidence of flood damage, theft, or salvage title after a serious accident. But it doesn't use quite as many data sources, according to Consumer Reports. Then there's also the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. It provides links to government-approved vehicle history reports, an effort to crack down on title washing of totaled or stolen vehicles in states that have lax regulations. Even if a vehicle checks out clean on those sites, however, it's no guarantee that it wasn't in a flood. Owners of uninsured vehicles damaged by floodwaters might try to sell the vehicle without getting a salvage or flood title, or a waterlogged vehicle may have been retitled in a state without regulations preventing this. So be sure to carefully inspect any used vehicle before you buy it, or pay a mechanic to do a professional inspection. Here are some signs to look for that may indicate flood damage, compiled from Consumer Reports and NBC News. A mildewy or moldy odor is a telltale sign of water damage. A strong smell of air freshener may mean the seller is trying to cover up a foul odor. Look for a water line on headlights, taillights, and in the engine compartment. These are sure signs of serious water damage. Test all the electrical components by repeatedly turning on and off headlights, radio, and windshield wipers. Roll electric windows up and down, and move the seats forward and back to be sure they work. Peel back the carpet a bit and look underneath for dried mud, mold, or sediment. Some electrical modules are on the floor and would be ruined if they've been submerged. Check the engine oil. If it looks like a milkshake, it's likely had flood water in the oil. Also look for rust on bare metal, such as exposed screws under the dashboard. If the air filter has been waterlogged, its cardboard frame will look soggy or textured. If rubber drain plugs under the car or below the doors look new, they may have been replaced after a flood. Flooding can also affect car sellers. Since our San Diego region recently experienced major flooding and has been declared a federal disaster area, would-be car buyers might suspect that used cars here may be flood damaged. So if you're selling a vehicle, it's a good idea to have a mechanic inspect it and provide your potential buyers with proof that it's passed the inspection. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
The U.S. Small Business Administration will open an SBA Business Recovery Center in National City starting on February 26th, and it will provide a wide range of services to businesses and nonprofits in San Diego County that were impacted by the severe storm and flooding January 21st through 23rd. No appointment is necessary. The Business Recovery Center is located at Southwestern College in National City in the Higher Education Center on the first floor. That's in room 7100. It will be open starting Monday, February 26th at noon, and thereafter, Mondays through Fridays from 8:30 in the morning until 5 p.m. The center will provide a one-stop location for businesses and nonprofits to access a variety of specialized help. Customer service reps will be available to meet individually with each business owner. Businesses and nonprofits of any size may borrow up to $2 million to repair or replace damaged or destroyed real estate, machinery, equipment, inventory, and other business assets if they're not fully covered by insurance or other recoveries. The first payment does not have to be made until a year after the loan is disbursed, and interest does not accrue until those 12 months have elapsed. Applicants can also apply online and get additional disaster assistance information at sba.gov/disaster or call the SBA Small Business Administration at 800-659-2955. The deadline to apply for property damage is April 19th, and the deadline to apply for economic injury is November 19th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery with a report from Lemon Grove. Lemon Grove residents showed up at the City Council meetings on February 6th and February 20th to voice disappointment in the city's response to major losses experienced by many residents and businesses from flooding on January 22nd. A group of residents organized a series of cleanups after the flood because the city had none planned, and residents were afraid that if debris were left to clog drains further, they might get more damage. Longtime resident John Wood has been leaving public comment for nearly a decade regarding Choyas Creek being clogged with debris and tree overgrowth, documented by a video that residents posted online. Wood told the council the culvert was blocked with water nearly 4 feet deep, but the city has blamed a Toyota dealership and refused to clear the culvert. Resident and cleanup organizer Alex Rotola said he and other residents feel ignored regarding recent concerns about storm drains. He added, despite previous discussions about this very topic in your council meetings, we see that no action has been taken to address this problem. He also criticized Mayor Raquel Vasquez for prioritizing her campaign for state assembly over the needs of residents who suffered flood damage. William Gorioka, the owner of Legend Auto Sales on Broadway, said his used car dealership lost nearly everything in the flood. He told East County Magazine he lost 23 vehicles, as well as computers, office furniture, paperwork tools, and more. He estimates his damages at nearly $300,000, adding, "My insurance won't cover property or vehicles because I do not have flood coverage." While a federal disaster declaration just issued may bring grant relief for residents with flood damage, up to about $42,000 per residence, businesses can only apply for low-interest loans, and Gorioka says he can't afford that. Resident Debbie Tellez spoke about her flooded property in Lemon Grove on Central Avenue. She explained, "This isn't an act of God, because I've had flooding as bad as I did this time at least 10 times over the last 7 years. I've gone to City Hall repeatedly." She said the city has 2 culverts nearby that led to the flooding on her property because water runs down to a 1900s cobblestone creek that can't hold this much water. Tellez said she had 18 inches of standing water still that does not drain. Lemon Grove's Public Works Director Izzy Murguia insisted that his department has worked tirelessly to protect public infrastructure and assess damages, adding, "The men and women of Public Works definitely deserve recognition for their hard work." On February 20th, more residents came to City Council to talk about sinkholes opening in their yards due to storm drain failures as a result of the recent storm. Austin Thomas, who lives on Drexel Court, said a sinkhole has caused a retaining wall on his property to fail, adding, "This sinkhole has consumed half of our backyard and poses a serious safety concern for the foundation of our house." He said two city workers came out to assess the wall but told him there's nothing they could do to help, other than waive permit fees for repairs that he can't afford. But Thomas blames the damage on a public culvert that runs to a storm drain nearby. Thomas said Councilman George Gastel has promised to send engineers out and that Councilwoman Leanna LeBaron visited his property to review the damages. At both meetings, LeBaron asked to have the storm drain issues put on the agenda for a future City Council meeting, but agendizing an item requires support of at least two members, and nobody else would join LeBaron in her request. Instead, the Council directed staff to hold a workshop on storm drains sometime in the future. Lemon Grove City Manager Lydia Romero stated that the city will notify the public when that workshop is scheduled.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
President Joe Biden has announced the approval of $1.2 billion in student debt cancellation for almost 153,000 borrowers currently enrolled in the Saving on a Valuable Education, or SAVE, repayment plan. The borrowers receiving relief are the first to benefit from a SAVE plan policy that provides debt forgiveness to borrowers who have been in repayment after as little as 10 years and took out $12,000 or less in student loans. Originally planned for July, the Biden-Harris administration implemented this provision of SAVE and is providing relief to borrowers nearly 6 months ahead of schedule. The Biden-Harris administration has now approved nearly $138 billion in student debt cancellation for almost 3.9 million borrowers through more than two dozen executive actions. A key goal of Biden's has been to make higher education a pathway to the middle class and to fix the student loan system. Although he has canceled more student debt than any prior president, even before today's announcement, congressional Republicans have fought efforts to reduce student loan debt as too costly for taxpayers. And conservative groups have blocked some earlier student debt forgiveness efforts in court, so the Biden administration revised its plans. Starting February 21st, the administration will be canceling debt for borrowers who are enrolled in the SAVE plan, have been in repayment for at least 10 years, and took out $12,000 or less in loans for college. For every additional $1,000 a borrower initially borrowed, they will receive relief after an additional year of payments. For example, a borrower enrolled in SAVE who took out $14,000 or less in federal loans to earn an associate's degree in biotechnology would receive full debt relief starting this week if they have been in repayment for 12 years. The U.S. Department of Education identified nearly 153,000 borrowers who are enrolled in SAVE plan who will have their debt canceled starting this week. And those borrowers will receive an email from President Biden informing them of their imminent relief. Next week, the Department of Education will also be reaching out directly to borrowers who are eligible for early relief but not currently enrolled in the SAVE plan to encourage them to enroll as soon as possible. This shortened time to forgiveness will particularly help community college and other borrowers with smaller loans and put many on track to being free of student debt faster than ever before, according to a fact sheet provided by the White House. Under the Biden-Harris administration's SAVE plan, an estimated 85% of future community college borrowers will be debt-free within 10 years. Last year, President Biden launched the SAVE plan, the most affordable repayment plan ever. Under the SAVE plan, monthly payments are based on a borrower's income and family size, not their loan balance. The SAVE plan ensures that if borrowers are making their monthly payments, their balances cannot grow because of unpaid interest. Also, starting in July, undergraduate loan payments will be cut in half, capping a borrower's loan payment at 5% of their discretionary income. Already, 7.5 million borrowers are enrolled in the SAVE plan, and 4.3 million of those borrowers have zero monthly payments. Today, the White House Council of Economic Advisers released an issue brief highlighting how low and middle income borrowers enrolled in SAVE could see significant saving in terms of interest saved over time and principal forgiven as a result of SAVE's early forgiveness provisions. The Biden-Harris administration's cancellation of many young borrowers' student debts have aimed to enable them to make investments such as buying homes and starting businesses. In addition to canceling many student loan debts, the Biden-Harris administration has also worked to make higher education more affordable for more Americans, including these steps: achieving the largest increases in Pell Grants in over a decade to help families who earn less than $60,000 a year achieve their higher education goals. Forgiving student loan debt for nearly 800,000 public service workers. Canceling student loan debt for more than 930,000 borrowers who have been in repayment for over 20 years but never got the relief they earned because of administrative failures with income-driven repayment plans. Holding colleges accountable for leaving students with unaffordable debts, and pursuing an alternative path to deliver student debt relief to as many borrowers as possible in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision striking down the administration's original debt relief plan. Last week, the Department of Education released proposed regulatory text to cancel student debt for borrowers who are experiencing hardship paying back their student loans, and late last year released proposals to cancel student debt for borrowers who owe more than they borrowed, first entered repayment over 20 years ago, attended low-quality programs, and would be eligible for loan forgiveness through income-driven repayment programs like SAVE, but have not applied. It's easy to enroll in SAVE. Borrowers with student loans can apply at studentaid.gov/save.
Donald Trump has been ordered to pay a $354 million penalty for fraudulently inflating his net worth and the value of his real estate holdings to obtain bank loans. In the New York civil trial, Judge Arthur Engoron also barred Trump from running a business in New York for 2 years and ordered that a monitor oversee the Trump Organization's business dealings. Two of Trump's sons, Eric and Don Jr., were each fined $4 million and prohibited from running the company for at least 3 years. This is not the first time that Trump has been found to have committed fraud. His family charity and Trump University were both shut down after separate courts found them to have engaged in fraud. Trump has claimed the New York fraud trial was politically motivated. After the verdict, he ranted on social media, calling the judge corrupt, slamming the attorney general as crooked, but with no evidence to back up those claims. Trump's attorney Chris Keiss says Trump's plans to appeal, Politico reports. To file an appeal, however, Trump must pay the $354 million in full plus interest. In an April deposition, he testified that he had only about $400 million in cash. The verdict comes weeks after Trump was ordered to pay $83 million for defaming writer E. Jean Carroll after a judge found that Trump sexually assaulted her. That means the former president and current presidential candidate owes over $443 million in legal judgments. It's unclear how he would come up with the money needed for an appeal. One option is to sell some real estate assets, which include hotels and golf resorts. Trump also has an application in to sell his stake in his Trump Media and Technology Group, an action regulators have approved but which could take months to close. Reuters reports that it would be illegal for Trump to use campaign funds to pay for the judgment in this legal case, since Trump Organization's fraud was unrelated to the campaign. By contrast, Trump has used campaign contributions to fund his legal defense in some of the criminal cases against him, such as the upcoming trial over paying alleged hush money to a porn star to protect his image during his 2016 presidential campaign. That criminal trial is slated to begin March 24th. It will be the first of four criminal trials that Trump is facing. Others include allegations of failing to return classified documents, inciting rioters during the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, pressuring Georgia election officials to alter results, and engaging in a conspiracy to send false electors to be counted in the 2020 election. Attorney General Letitia James praised Judge Engoron's ruling in New York, though she did not get everything she sought. James had asked that Trump Organization be banned permanently from doing business in New York, and she had sought higher fines on Trump's sons. Judge Engoron found that Trump was not credible as a witness, refusing to answer many questions. Trump engaged in threats that resulted in gag orders that he twice violated, drawing fines of an additional $15,000. The judge also criticized Trump for refusing to accept responsibility for systematically engaging in fraud, such as claiming his residence at Mar-a-Lago had three times its actual square footage. Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, testified that he'd been instructed by Trump for years to wildly exaggerate Trump's net worth. Attorney General James has noted that the average American cannot inflate the value of their home to get a mortgage, and she said Trump should be held to the same standard as anyone else. She concluded at a press conference after the verdict, "Donald Trump falsely, knowingly inflated his net worth by billions of dollars to unjustly enrich himself, his family, and to cheat the system. Donald Trump may have authored the art of the deal," she concluded, "but he perfected the art of the steal." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Santee Firefighters Association is sponsoring the Protect Santee ballot initiative aimed at improving fire protection. The city's fire department resources have not kept pace with growth in the community, a problem so severe that firefighters and emergency medical first responders are not able to meet national safety response time standards, multiple reports confirm. According to a press release issued by the Santee Firefighters Association, with just 17 on-call firefighters and two outdated fire stations, the fire department's response times are often double the crucial 4-minute National Fire Safety Response Standard, as AP Triton reported in its 2023 Santee Community Risk Assessment. The International Association of Firefighters, or IAFF, was hired by Santee's firefighters to provide a report on the fire department's capabilities. It found that most fire engines are staffed by three firefighters, not the minimum of four required by the National Fire Protection Association. Moreover, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, prohibits firefighters from entering a burning building or other dangerous situations unless there are at least two firefighters inside and two more outside. So Santee's three-person crews must wait until another crew arrives before they can enter a burning home, school, or business. The study also found that most roads in Santee are not currently served within safe response times. The report concludes that this results in an increased risk of death or injury to firefighters and the citizens of Santee, as well as increased risk for considerable property loss of housing units and businesses throughout the city. The report recommends that Santee increase staffing to have at least four firefighters on fire engines and fire trucks. It also recommends that the city add a new fire station near Cottonwood and Palm Glen Drive. The Protect Santee ballot initiative proposes a small temporary sales tax increase to provide the resources and firefighter personnel necessary to meet national safety standards. Santee Fire Chief Justin Matsushita says, "With these changes, we will be able to protect all of Santee, something we struggle to do right now because of a lack of resources." He also said, "As the population and number of incidents rise, this problem is getting worse every day. We simply cannot provide Santee residents the emergency services they need without this initiative." The plan calls for first qualifying a ballot measure through a signature collection process of Santee voters. The Santee City Council would then be asked to place the Protect Santee measure on this year's November ballot. Over the next 20 years, The Santee Fire Department will be tasked with responding to up to 30,000 additional incidents per year and to protect a population that could increase by as much as 50%. Yet, there are no additional resources allocated to the fire department, which is already underfunded. More information about the Protect Santee initiative can be found at protectsantee.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College, a treasured community destination, has closed temporarily amid efforts to reorganize under new leadership. Interim Executive Director Lauren Magnuson announced in an email sent to media and supporters of the garden, "As we celebrate our 25th anniversary this year, we will be undergoing major structural changes." She added that the garden is committed to reopening and continuing its mission to educate and inspire the community to promote water conservation garden. Now, the temporary closure announcement follows months of financial concerns stemming primarily from large loans taken out by the garden's former director, Jennifer Pillsbury, during and after COVID. Those loans total over $1 million, including a Small Business Association COVID loan, a mission-funded finance loan that's now past due, and a loan from the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District due in May. Pillsbury alone signed for the loans, although the bylaws for Friends of the Water Conservation Garden required two signatures, and Friends' agreement with the Water Conservation Garden's Joint Powers Authority prohibited loans beyond the term of the JPA's contract with the garden, which ends in June, and yet some of these were 30-year loans. Though ERC funds have recently been unfrozen by the federal government, and that money is anticipated to come in during the next few months, the garden has run out of operating funds even after laying off employees and drastically slashing costs. Discussions are now underway for a different entity to take over operation of the garden from Friends. Prospects include the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District itself or the Water Conservation Joint Powers Authority, or JPA, which includes as members Helix and Otay Water Districts, Sweetwater Authority, the City of San Diego, the County Water Authority, and the College District. Or a new nonprofit entity could be formed to operate or raise funds for garden operations and programs in the future. JPA member Kathleen Hedberg, who's also a director in the Helix Water District, posted on Facebook in reaction to news of the garden's closure, "I will, as your Helix Water District representative, work hard to ensure that it will not be closed for long. We will restructure operations," she pledged. The garden's army of about 100 volunteers have voiced eagerness to help, but they can't do so until a new entity can provide insurance for the facility. For now, the garden has canceled upcoming events such as Tomato Mania and the Spring Garden Festival, also canceled our educational programs such as the Ms. Smarty Plants program for children, water conservation courses for adults, and popular wellness classes such as yoga in the garden. On the garden's Facebook page, members of the public voiced concerns, fond memories, and hopes that the garden can soon survive and thrive. Elizabeth Adkins posted, "This place is very special to me," adding that she brought her aging father there to walk around, also bringing her children to the garden during the pandemic. Marianne Murphy Claggett called the garden a gem and voiced confidence that it will open again. Susanna Kaufman voiced sadness at news of the closure, adding, "This place is a treasure, and one I walk in every weekend and during school vacations. Please let us know how we can help to keep this open." A new fund is expected to be established soon to support the garden. For now, anyone who wants to support the garden can donate to its Survive and Thrive Fund through Friends, which can be found on the Water Conservation Garden's website at thegarden.org.
The City of La Mesa is seeking proposals for the Walkway of the Stars mural project in downtown La Mesa. The walkway features decorative stones with stars naming volunteers who have given 10,000 hours or more of service to the City of La Mesa, as well as 8 community murals painted in 2003 depicting volunteerism in the city. This project will create up to 8 new murals along the walls of the walkway. Artists will be selected to create murals in spaces approximately 10.5 feet high with varying lengths from 12 to 18 feet. The theme of the Walkway of the Stars is honoring La Mesa's tradition of volunteerism. Their murals will follow the same theme. Artists can find guidelines on how to submit proposals on the City of La Mesa's website, cityoflamesa.us, in the Arts and Culture section. The deadline to submit proposals for the new murals is March 8th at 4 p.m. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Daneta Ramirez.
San Diego County District Attorney Summer Steffen has received the United States Attorney General's Award for Meritorious Public Service, the top public service award granted by the U.S. Department of Justice. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the recipients for the 71st Annual Attorney General's Awards, which were presented January 31st in Washington, D.C. D.A. Steffen was selected in recognition of her leadership and collaboration with federal law enforcement on multiple large-scale operations to combat fentanyl trafficking, elder fraud, and violent crime. The Attorney General's Award recognizes that D.A. Steffen has furthered the mission and goals of the Department of Justice by implementing a protocol to identify and investigate school threats, tripling hate crime prosecutions, embracing community policing and criminal justice reform, leading law enforcement de-escalation training, and creating and expanding diversion programs for substance abusers, juveniles, veterans, and those struggling with mental health issues. The award is also in recognition of her leadership in prevention and messaging campaigns focused on reducing sexual assaults on college campuses, raising awareness about human trafficking, and using social media to warn the public about counterfeit pills and prevent fentanyl overdoses. Steffen says this award reflects on the collaboration and partnership with the dedicated team at the U.S. Attorney's Office, along with federal, state, and local law enforcement, all working together to keep our neighborhoods safe. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Daneta Ramirez with a Crime Beat report. El Cajon police arrested a young mother on February 1st for allegedly stealing nearly $1,000 of merchandise from Dick's Sporting Goods in Parkway Plaza and removing anti-theft sensors, all while pushing her young child around the store in a stroller. After she left the store, police officers found her nearby and arrested her for grand theft. During the investigation, drugs were located in the stroller within arm's reach of the child. The child was taken into protective custody, says Lieutenant Eric Thornton. Police identified the woman as 29-year-old Titiana Johnson. She has an extensive arrest history, including theft and drug-related offenses, according to the police. Anyone with additional information about these crimes can contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311 or Crime Stoppers at sdcrimestoppers.org.
Democratic leaders in the U.S. House and Senate reintroduced the Housing for All Act, which would put about $100 billion over 10 years toward solving the crisis of people experiencing homelessness. The bill would fund federal programs to build affordable housing and provide emergency shelter. California Senator Alex Padilla, who is co-sponsoring the bill, says housing is a human right, not a privilege.
There are more than 653,000 people experiencing homelessness in the United States, including over 181,000 here in the state of California. We know that there is a shortage of 7.3 million affordable homes in the country. So the stakes are indeed high.
Opponents of the bill cite concerns about cost. On Tuesday, local, county, state, and federal leaders spoke at a Project Homekey site in Los Angeles, a program started during the pandemic that turns old motels into permanent supportive housing with wraparound services to address issues of addiction, mental health, and unemployment. Dashiki Wickrema serves as Deputy Secretary for Homelessness with the California Business Consumer Services and Housing Agency.
Homekey has funded over 15,000 homes in 250 projects across California, and these projects will serve almost 170,000 residents.
Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass notes the bill would also fund programs to keep people from being evicted.
One of the fastest growing sectors of the unhoused population are our elders, seniors, who maybe worked in retail their whole life, didn't have a 401k, didn't have a pension. Social Security really will not pay for anything in Los Angeles, and they wind up unhoused.
The proposal would also establish a commission to focus on racial equity in housing. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Danita Ramirez with a technology report. San Diego will be well represented on the House of Representatives' new Task Force on Artificial Intelligence, or AI. The bipartisan task force's 24 congressional members include two from San Diego, Democrat Sarah Jacobs and Republican Daryl Issa. The goals of the task force are to explore how Congress can drive innovation and maintain American leadership in AI, assure fair usage of the technology across numerous industries, and safeguard against current and emerging threats. Issa was appointed by House Speaker Mike Johnson, while Jacobs was named by Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Both have backgrounds in technology. Congresswoman Jacobs grew up in a technology family as the granddaughter of Qualcomm's founder. She's the ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa, where she has focused on ensuring AI global governance systems are inclusive. Jacobs states, "As one of the youngest members of Congress, I'm painfully aware of how outdated our laws are and how we've largely failed to keep up with technology." She adds that as a task force member, she looks forward to expanding access to the opportunities created by AI, setting up guardrails to prioritize safety and fairness, and protecting against harmful outcomes such as bias and discrimination. Jacob notes that the technology holds both promise and peril, concluding, "With thoughtful and deliberate rules, AI can help strengthen democracy and uphold human and civil rights around the world, instead of being a tool for further democratic backsliding." Congressman Issa chairs the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Courts, Intellectual Property, and the Internet, where he has convened hearings on the issue, its technological potential, and the proper role of government. He also held a roundtable discussion with over 20 industry leaders. Issa's tech background includes owning a company that developed Viper car alarms. He says, "The limitless possibility of AI is here, and with it, the next opportunity for incomparable American leadership in technology and innovation." But he voiced qualms about overregulation, stating, "Rather than looking to regulate right away, now is a time for the government to listen, learn, and resolve to bring out the best AI has to offer so it can change our lives for the better." Issa adds that he looks forward to working with his colleagues to make sure Congress gets AI right.
A new dog park has opened in San Diego's Allied Gardens neighborhood for pet owners to bring their dogs to frolic off-leash. The new park, next to the Allied Gardens pool on Glenroy Street, is larger than most other local dog parks. The park features logs for agility training and seating, plus separate fenced areas for both large and small dogs. San Diego City Councilman Raul Campillo spoke at the grand opening, stating, "I'm proud to deliver this dog park, the first ever city-funded off-leash dog park in District 7, for Allied Gardens residents and the surrounding Navajo area. The new dog park was funded with $389,000 in the city's fiscal year 2024 budget, for installation and maintenance. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
California lawmakers are considering a range of options to combat a rise over the last 2 years of felony retail theft, large-scale shoplifting, and held the latest in a series of hearings in West Hollywood on Friday. The State Assembly Select Committee on Retail Theft heard from residents, business owners, and social justice groups. Tanish Hollins with the nonprofit Californians for Safety and Justice says everyone agreed on one thing.
The retailers and folks who patronize stores deserve safety. People should be able to do business. That's not up for debate. But relying on incarceration, jail and prison and arrest are not going to get us out of this problem because it's far more complex.
Some in law enforcement have suggested in recent years that Prop 47, passed a decade ago, has contributed to the uptick. Prop 47 raised the threshold for felony theft to $950. So if the amount stolen is more than that, it'd be a felony with jail time. The law addressed overcrowding in the jails and has saved $750 million since 2015 in incarceration costs and diverted it to programs that address drivers of crime, including poverty, addiction, and mental illness. Hollins says fear-mongering should not be allowed to undermine criminal justice reform and notes that just 8% of people who participated in Prop 47-funded programs end up back behind bars.
But there are many who are really capitalizing off of the fact that people are scared, that businesses are being impacted, and that there's this perception that there's lawlessness. But the truth is, there are ways for us to intervene in this crisis, and we should be using them.
Governor Gavin Newsom has proposed cracking down on resellers of stolen goods and clarifying that law enforcement can combine the value of multiple thefts to reach the threshold for felony grand theft. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is John Tidwell.
And this is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, bringing you the top festivals and events coming up across San Diego's inland region. Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bistro in La Mesa hosts its next comedy night on February 23rd at 7:30 p.m. This month's show promises an uproarious evening with a stellar lineup of talented comedians. Beyond the laughter, Space Bar also offers foods made from locally sourced ingredients. For more information, you can visit at spacebar.com.
The city of El Cajon is going to the dogs, trying to break the world record for the most dogs to watch a movie screening together. You're invited to bring your dog to a showing of the movie Beethoven on Saturday, February 24th at 1 p.m. in Wells Park. The family comedy film features a St. Bernard dog who causes all kinds of trouble for his human family. This event will also have fun activities for children. Be sure that your dog is vaccinated, not aggressive, and used to being around crowds with people and dogs. You can come early to enjoy dog park areas at Wells Park, then hopefully help set a world's record.
The California Wolf Center in Julian invites you to book a guided tour of their facility to see their resident wolves and learn about wolf conservation. Various tours are offered each weekend this month at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. Reservations are required. The Wolf Conservation and Behavioral Enrichment Tours are both 1 hour in length and offer an opportunity to see critically endangered wild wolves and learn all about them from an expert at the center's conservation facility on KQ Ranch Road in Julian. Both public and private tours are available, and you can reserve online at californiawolfcenter.org.
The Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association will lead a full moon nighttime walk in South Palm Wash on February 24th from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. The mile-and-a-half-long moonlight walk is a tradition of the organization, now in its 13th year. A flashlight, water, and good hiking shoes are required. For reservations, visit the Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association at abdnha.org.
Young Adult Theater will present Little Shop of Horrors, February 16th through 25th at Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. A deviously delicious Broadway and Hollywood sci-fi smash musical, Little Shop of Horrors has devoured the hearts of theatergoers for over 30 years. The meek floral assistant Seymour Krelborn stumbles across a new breed of plant he names Audrey II after his co-worker crush. But he soon discovers the plant's out-of-this-world origins and intent toward global domination. For tickets, visit yatsandiego.org/littleshop.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona hosts its next open farm day on February 24th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Guests can enjoy a bird and camel show, meet and treat camels and labradoodles, take a camel ride, and shop for camel milk products, including artisan soaps, lotions, chocolate, and more. For tickets and registration, visit cameldairy.com.
The 18th Annual Plein Air Invitational in Borrego Springs promises to be a captivating celebration of art and nature. The event runs from March 4th through April 14th. The Invitational centers around plein air paintings, which capture the unique beauty and environmental significance of the Anza Borrego Desert and Borrego Valley. While wildflowers typically start popping up halfway through February, the peak blooming usually occurs in March and continues through April. Given all this winter's rain, this year's floral blooms in the Anza Borrego should be early and quite exceptional. 14 talented artists have been invited to create plein air or outdoor paintings during the week of March 4th to 9th, inspired by the desert landscape. Throughout the week, new artwork will be displayed daily in the gallery at the Borrego Arts Institute. On March 9th, from 3 to 5 p.m., the awards ceremony and reception will take place. You can get more information at borregoartinstitute.org.
The Heritage Events Center at Sequan Casino will host a Leap Day concert on February 29th at 8 p.m. with the Marshall Tucker Band and Jefferson Starship. Jefferson Starship has earned 3 platinum and 8 gold records, as well as many top 40 single hits, such as We Built the City and Somebody to Love. The Marshall Tucker Band's many hits include Heard It in a Love Song, Can't You See, and Ramblin'. For tickets, you can visit sequan.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park and the San Diego Astronomy Association invite you to a star party on the first Friday of each month, starting at sunset at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground parking lot. The next star party is on March 1st. Telescopes will be available to view the nighttime sky, including stars, planets, and constellations, weather permitting. Find more information at Mission Trails Regional Park's website, which is mtrp.org.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present the comic play 5 Women Wearing the Same Dress. The show runs March 1st through 24th. During an ostentatious wedding reception at a Tennessee estate, 5 reluctant, identically clad bridesmaids hide out in an upstairs bedroom, each with their own reason to avoid the proceedings below. As the afternoon wears on, these 5 very different women joyously discover a common bond in this wickedly funny, irreverent, and touching celebration of women's spirit. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
The Mount Helix Park Foundation will host Nature Day atop Mount Helix on March 2nd from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event celebrates the historic nature preserve, native plants, and wildlife that rely on habitat at Mount Helix Park. There will be fun for all ages, from kids' activities to learning lectures. Vendors from nature-minded organizations will also have booths, crafts, and activities. You can bring a picnic or get lunch from food trucks. There will be no parking on Mount Helix, but you can take a complimentary shuttle from the fire station at the corner of Vivera and Mount Helix Drive. Learn more at mounthelixpark.org.
Country music singer and songwriter Lyle Lovett will perform live in concert at the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon on March 24th at 7 p.m. Lovett has won 4 Grammy Awards, including Best Country Vocal Performance and Best Country Album. He's recorded 13 albums and released 25 singles, including the hit song Cowboy Man. For tickets, visit magnoliasandiego.com.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There's the, while he's been president, I think that is the obstruction, the cover-up, and of course the sweetheart deal.
House Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan is doubling down on allegations that President Joe Biden and his son Hunter had corrupt dealings with Ukrainian energy company Burisma. This comes as former FBI informant Alexander Smirnov has been charged with lying about the Bidens and working with Russian intelligence. Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin says Smirnov's indictment destroys the GOP's already weak impeachment effort.
It appears like the whole thing is not only obviously false and fraudulent, but a product of Russian disinformation and propaganda. And that's been the motor force behind this investigation for more than a year.
Meanwhile, Biden is facing growing pressure to back a ceasefire in Gaza after the U.S. vetoed another United Nations resolution calling for one. U.N. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield says it would have sent the wrong message to Hamas.
Without the hostage releases, we know that the fighting is going to continue.
Israel says unless the hostages are released, it'll go ahead with a military offense into southern Gaza. A million Palestinian refugees are crowded into Rafah in desperate conditions. The Biden administration continues to argue against that offensive, but critics want it to be more forceful. Days after the Alabama Supreme Court ruled frozen embryos are children, the University of Alabama at Birmingham is pausing in vitro fertilization. Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley, who had her son through artificial insemination, says embryos are babies.
To save sperm or to save eggs. But when you talk about an embryo, you are talking about, to me, that's a life.
New York activists are calling on the state's Independent Redistricting Commission to revise its maps, saying they dilute minority voices. Tamika D. Mallory with Until Freedom says if the new maps go through, it could let majority white communities overrule communities of color and drive down turnout across the state.
When people don't see candidates that they believe in, people that they trust, and people who they know have a real true understanding of the dynamics of their community and their needs, people do not feel motivated to go to the polls.
Following the Kansas City parade shooting, Missouri Democrats have filed long-shot legislation to return the right to limit guns to local jurisdictions. The Republican-led legislature has paused two gun bills, one of which would allow firearms on public transit and in places of worship. But State House Democratic leader Crystal Quaid accused Republicans of political games.
They keep saying that they need to pass these bills to make Missourians safer. Obviously, they know that it will not make Missourians safer.
Finally, the White House says it'll forgive $1.2 billion in student debt for more than 150,000 borrowers. Biden says it'll apply to folks who borrowed less than $12,000. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.